Thank you so much, Dove. Okay, so it is time for Regina doing her the guiding light. All right, Regina, the mic is all yours.
Thank you. Gosh, I hadn't spoken much today yet. My voice didn't come with me right away. This is what happens when you're alone all day. I did talk to Ken a little bit on the phone, but that's about all the talking I've done today. But thank you very much, Cheryl. And Dove, also. It's great to have you here with us in Awakening Together, Dove. And yeah, I am here for the guiding light, as Cheryl pointed out. And last week when we were looking at the guiding light, we were in the book of John. We looked at the last part of chapter 18, which is where Jesus is talking with Pontius Pilate. And what we saw through observing Pontius Pilate is that Pontius Pilate was making assumptions and having beliefs and not questioning them. For example, one of the things that we looked at was that the Jewish accusers, the teachers of the law and the chief priests who brought Jesus. Oh, am I in and out? Let's wait and see if anybody else can hear me. How's the sound? You too. I don't know what the yes means, assistant. Yes, I'm in and out, maybe. Sometimes when that happens with me, what I need to do is reboot, which is unfortunate. Because, of course, that means I'll be gone for about 5 minutes. Is it better? Well, let me know. And if I need to reboot, we'll just stop and reboot. Okay. So last week, I'm still watching everybody's comments, so forgive my distraction. I'm looking to see if people can hear me. All right, good. So last week, as I was pointing out, the Jewish accusers, the teachers of the law, and the chief priests brought Jesus to Pontius Pilate and said that he is a criminal. And so Pontius Pilate, the way the story is told in the book of John, Pontius Pilate kind of went with that assumption, with the assumption that if they said Jesus is a criminal, Jesus must be a criminal. And he didn't really question that assumption in his mind. And we see Jesus giving Pontius Pilate the opportunity to question the assumption by saying things like, is that your idea or did others talk to you about me? Right? Jesus is inquiring into Pontius Pilate's assumptions, but Pontius Pilate does not follow with his own inquiry. Jesus starts talking about his kingdom as being from another place, but Pontius Pilate does not display any curiosity or questioning, you know, what is it you mean, or no healthy curiosity at all. And really what we looked at is that Pontius Pilate is showing us what we may do, what we most likely do, which means that oftentimes we just believe what we are told. I used the example last week, if you know, we're sitting in a room and some man enters the room and somebody leans over to us and says something like, you know, watch out for him. He's going to try and catch you in your words and make a fool out of you. Then immediately, you know, we often trust that. Okay, I got to watch out for this guy. I got to watch what I say around this guy. And we never question, why did I take on this assumption? Why did I take on this belief? And throughout our entire lifetimes, we have taken on assumptions and we have taken on beliefs that we were taught without ever questioning them. I used Michael Langford as an example of someone who did something different. If I remember correctly, Michael Langford was around 7 years old when the question, how do I know that is true, arose in his mind. And during the period of time when most young people are taking on beliefs, just, you know, hearing what they are to believe and believing it, he began questioning those beliefs. And as a result, he never took on many of the beliefs that many of us did take on because we were not questioning. And this doesn't mean that it's too late for us. You know, I'm 56 years old. One more year, I'll be 50 years older than Michael Langford was when that question was born in his mind. But I can begin questioning my beliefs now, if I haven't already. I can begin questioning my beliefs now. In fact, every one of us can begin questioning our beliefs now. So that was really the moral of the story from last week's reading. And today we're going to begin with John chapter 19. So let me do what I traditionally do at this period when we finish the summary of last week and before we begin this week, is I like to pick out a song and play a song, and then we'll be able to see how the sound is going as well while the song is playing. So let me just kind of spin my little mouse here and pick out a song. The song that I have picked out is called You Can Rest Now by a group called The River's Voice. So here we go.
Open your feet to view.
I've heard that song dozens of times, but I think it sounded more beautiful to me that time than I've ever heard it before. So I'm going to begin reading in the book of John at chapter 19. The name of this story in my Bible is Jesus Sentenced to be Crucified. Then Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged. The soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head. They clothed him in a purple robe and went up to him again and again, saying, "Hail, the King of the Jews." And they struck him on the face. Once more, Pilate came out and said to the Jews, "Look, I am bringing him out to you to let you know that I find no basis for a charge against him." When Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, Pilate said to them, "Here is the man." As soon as the chief priests and their officials saw him, they shouted, "Crucify! Crucify!" But Pilate answered, "You take him and crucify him. As for me, I find no basis for a charge against him." The Jews insisted, "We have a law, and according to that law, he must die, because he claimed to be the Son of God." When Pilate heard this, he was even more afraid, and he went back inside the palace. "Where do you come from?" he asked Jesus. But Jesus gave him no answer. "Do you refuse to speak to me?" Pilate said. "Don't you realize I have power either to free you or to crucify you?" Jesus answered, "You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above. Therefore, the one who handed me over to you is guilty of a greater sin." From then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free, but the Jews kept shouting, "If you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar." When Pilate heard this, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judge's seat at a place known as the stone pavement, which in Aramaic is Gabbatha. It was the day of preparation of Passover week, about the sixth hour. "Here is your king," Pilate said to the Jews. But they shouted, "Take him away, take him away, crucify him." "Shall I crucify your king?" Pilate asked. "We have no king but Caesar," the chief priests answered. Finally, Pilate handed him over to them to be crucified. So that's the story that we have today. So in this first paragraph then, under chapter 9, when it says, Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged, the soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head. They clothed him in a purple robe and went up to him again and again, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews." And they struck him in the face. We know what Jesus says in A Course in Miracles. I believe it's probably in chapter 6, where Jesus asks us to realize that we allow ourselves to be crucified with much less than what he went through. And, of course, he chose to see only love, and he asks us to see only love too, right? So when I read this paragraph, which is really what I would call, even though he's being flogged, you know, one of the things that the paragraph emphasizes is what I'm going to call the mocking of Jesus. It emphasizes the crown of thorns. It emphasizes the purple robe. It emphasizes them saying, "Hail, King of the Jews." Right, it emphasizes that. And I think it's nice that it emphasizes the mocking, because we are more likely to go through a mocking than a flogging. And so what we really want to look at when we're contemplating this paragraph from the Bible is we want to look at our reaction to a mocking, our reaction to people gossiping about us, our reaction to people saying things about us that aren't true, misunderstanding our intentions, all of that type of thing, because that's what's more likely to happen to us. The song that we played just before we began reading this was "You Can Rest Now." And I don't think that song was an accident considering what we are reading now. In fact, as we continue reading this, you know, we see Jesus who is falsely accused. And of course, we can be falsely accused as well. And the song is, of course, "You Can Rest Now." I personally believe that it is really important that we choose a posture of remembering that what we truly want is awakening. And that we choose to remain in that posture no matter what appears to be going on around us. I remember reading, I think it was probably in A New Earth, but I remember reading in one of Eckhart Tolle's books where he talked about the spiritual student or aspirant or seeker. I don't know what word he used. I'll just say the spiritual person. He talked about the spiritual person who, of course, perceives themselves as all spiritual, but then begins to really freak out the moment the stock market drops. And that's just an example he uses. But what he's pointing out to us is that we aren't genuinely on a spiritual path if we are reacting to the world. And that most definitely includes when things are not going the way that our personality would choose. When the stock market drops and we lose our money, when people say things about us that aren't true, when our lover leaves us, you know, just whatever long list of things that can, quote, go wrong that you can think of. So what I'm talking about then is when things don't go well in the opinion of the personality. When things don't go well in the opinion of the personality, this is when we have what I'm going to call a strong opportunity to choose to be genuine on our spiritual path. And what Eckhart Tolle was pointing out in A New Earth is that so many people who claim they're on a spiritual path do not do that. We could say there's a lack of genuineness. When things do not go the way that our personality would have it go, there's reaction. There's attempt to control, attempt to manipulate. There's falling back on the ego, and the way the ego attempts to keep us safe, and the way the ego tries to make everything go in a way where we can feel comfortable. And by falling back on the ego, of course, what we are doing is re-emphasizing for ourselves that we are the body-mind personality. It's the opposite of the practice of awakening. And so if awakening is truly what we want, and I will admit that there are people on the spiritual path for other reasons. I know that that's true. You know, spirituality today is popular. You know, and there's there's something, I mean, you know, I was recently somewhere, I think it was at the Pueblo Chili Fest, is that what it's called, Lynn? And, you know, they have booths. And what I really noticed in these booths, it was really funny, is that you could walk in and maybe they were iPhone covers they were selling, or maybe they were signs to hang in your room that they were selling. They would be selling different things. But I noticed, you know, Buddha and marijuana leaves and, you know, gun propaganda and Taoist signs all getting sold together. Because they're all cool. They're all popular. They're all cool. They're all popular, right? So people aren't just on the spiritual path because awakening is calling. I'll say that. They aren't just on the spiritual path because awakening is calling. And so if someone is on the spiritual path for reasons other than awakening calling, you know, they're going to be just as caught up in the world as anybody else, and that's okay. You know, we can expect that. But our responsibility is to ask ourselves, why am I here? What do I want? And if awakening feels like a genuine calling coming from our heart, and if we genuinely want to embrace that calling, then we want to start paying really, really close attention when things are not going the way the personality would choose, because these are our great opportunities. I'm reminded of Ramana Maharshi right now and his awakening experience. Some of you may remember he was a young man. I think some reports say 16, some reports say 17. But he was a young man and he was doing his homework. And the fear of death came over him. And when he tells the story, he says, this line is so important. He says, the fear of death drove my mind inward. And of course, it drove his mind inward into self-inquiry, where he began to really question, what am I? Am I the body? Or am I the spirit that survives the death of the body? But I love that line. The fear of death drove my mind inward. So the question is, when things are not going well in the opinion of the personality, do we allow that to drive the mind inward instead of reacting with the ego? Do we look at what we are feeling, look at what we are believing, pay attention to what we are tempted to do or say with the ego and choose differently? Do we become more alert and more aware of our choice for awakening in those times? The fear of death drove my mind inward. I feel like when things aren't going well in the opinion of the personality, what we have is an opportunity to choose genuinely our purpose of awakening. Of course, we always have that opportunity, but, you know, when things are going well, you know, it's pretty natural just to be happy and joyous and loving. It's when things aren't going well in the opinion of the personality, when it becomes so easy to become controlling or angry or manipulative or fearful, right? So that's when there's a greater opportunity then, in spite of these ego tendencies. I'm going to call them the ego tendencies for safety. It's perceived safety. In spite of the ego tendencies for perceived safety, we have the choice to let our mind be driven inward, to go into enhanced awareness, enhanced watching, or as the song says, you can rest now. So enhanced resting. What we see happening in chapter 19 of the book of John is really two things going on. First of all, Pilate is responding a little differently in chapter 19 than he was in chapter 18. In chapter 18, remember, Pilate was not questioning. In chapter 19 now, he does seem to be questioning. But what's interesting about his questioning is that his questioning seems to be coming from fear. It's almost like he has a fear that if he is responsible for crucifying this man, something bad is going to happen to him. So his wanting to get out of being responsible for crucifying isn't coming from what I'm going to call genuine questioning. It's still coming from the ego attempts at protection or safety. Now, what's not in this particular story that is in other stories in the Bible, other Gospels, is that Pilate's wife had a dream. And she had a dream. I don't remember the dream specifically now, and I'm not going to go looking for it. But the gist of the dream was that something bad would happen to Pilate if he crucified this man. So maybe, even though it doesn't show up in this particular story, while Jesus was being flogged, she told him about this dream. Because what we see after the flogging is he's now acting very different. He really wants to say, look, this man is innocent. You know, let's let him go. I mean, they've already chosen Barabbas over Jesus, and he takes him back. You know, his tradition is only to release one man on the Passover, but he takes Jesus back, and even though he's already released Barabbas, he's willing to release this guy, Jesus. And in fact, he practically seems to be begging them to take this man back. But the reason we know that's out of fear is because it says when he took Jesus back to them, the Jews insisted, we have a law, and according to that law, he must die because he claimed to be the Son of God. And then verse 8 says, when Pilate heard this, he was even more afraid. This is how we know that Pilate's questioning and Pilate's wanting to release Jesus is coming from fear. It's coming from, again, that ego protection. So again, Pilate is demonstrating for us the way we are. You know, how do we act? I remember when I lived in North Carolina, there was a time that the stock market crashed. At that time, I think I had around $140,000 in an IRA. And the stock market crashed, and that $140,000 dropped down to like $80,000. So it was a pretty big crash. And of course, the more money you had, the more money you lost, right? And I remember very, very clearly many friends of mine who were, you know, on the spiritual path, and this was, of course, after the crash, responding to the crash by changing all of their investments, trying to do something to get their money back. And I remember that fear rising in me. You know, what should I do, what they're doing? Should I follow suit? Should I change my investments? And I remember clearly, 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 just do nothing, because the only reason you want to do something now is fear. Because of where you are coming from. Not that there's anything wrong with changing your investments, right? But because of where you are coming from, you are going to re-emphasize that voice of fear. You're going to re-emphasize that ego identification if you go changing your investments because of fear. Well, Pilate is trying to set Jesus free, but he's not trying to set Jesus free because of genuine questioning. He's trying to set Jesus free because of fear, maybe because of his wife's dream. And the lesson in this is for us to pay attention, again, when things don't go in the way that the personality would choose, do we fall back on listening to fear? Do we still think fear is going to save us? Do we trust fear more than anything else? Now, Jesus is presenting another option. Jesus is, he's the one that's being flogged. He's the one that's being mocked. He's the one that's being falsely accused. He's the one who's going to be crucified if this continues down the path that it's going. And he is not defending himself in any way. He is not trying to manipulate the situation. He is not falling back on the ego survival ideas. He is just allowing it all to be. And in fact, at one point when Pilate, again, acting from fear, wanting to set Jesus free because he believes his safety somehow lies in setting Jesus free, right? Again, maybe because of his wife's dream. So he wants to set Jesus free. He tried to convince the Jews and they wouldn't help him. So now he's trying to convince Jesus to say something so that I have an excuse to set you free. But again, he's coming from fear. And Jesus knows he's coming from fear, knows he's coming from ego protection. And Jesus answers him by saying, "You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above." Now, this is a statement of truth in that, you know, the way things are unfolding is the way things are unfolding because of the divine law that we learned about at the beginning of the book of John. You know, all manifestation comes from divine law. And so this story is unfolding in the way it's unfolding because everybody is believing what they are believing, right? But another thing that is happening with Jesus is he is offering absolutely no resistance to the way things are unfolding. He is in total acceptance that this is perfection. That this is what is to happen. And he also doesn't see this as binding him or imprisoning him or threatening him in any way. His freedom is not in jeopardy, even in this extreme situation. So Jesus is demonstrating for us not acting from the ego survival mechanism or the ego safety mechanism. This was the choice that I made when I did not change my investments. Again, not that there's anything wrong with changing investments, right? It's just that at that time, at this particular time when the crash had occurred, there was fear. And people were operating from fear. Like Pilate is operating from fear. And my guidance was because it is fear that wants you to change your investments, it is better not to change them. It is better not to act from fear. It is better to be in acceptance of losing in that case $60,000. It is better to be in acceptance of losing $60,000. It is better to say I could not lose $60,000 if it did not come from above. Right? It is better to be in pure acceptance of losing $60,000 than it is to act from fear. And again, if awakening is truly interesting to us, if this is what we want, this is what we want to look at within ourselves when things do not seem to go our way. What do I want more? Do I want to try to feel temporarily safe by controlling things, manipulating things, changing things, coming from fear, doing what the voice of fear is guiding me to do? Would I rather just let this be, even if it's a train wreck, right? Even if it's a train wreck. Even, you know, there's another story that Eckhart Tolle tells, also possibly in A New Earth. He tells a story about a monk, a Buddhist monk, who was a teacher and had a lot of students. And in that village where this monk lived, there was a girl who became pregnant. And actually, I think it was like the boy next door who made her pregnant. But she didn't want to get him in trouble, and so she lied. And she said that it was the monk did that. And so the parents were very upset, and when the baby was born, they took the baby to the monk, and they said, "Here, it's your child, you raise it." And the monk just said something like, "Is that so?" And he took the child, and he began raising the child. And because all of his students thought he was now a fake, a liar, a hypocrite, they all left him, so now he has no students. You could say his reputation is shot. Right? You know, probably everyone in the village, you know, was talking about him, avoiding him, you know, making fun of him, et cetera, et cetera. But he just starts raising the child. Probably falls in love with the child, as you can imagine. And after a year of raising this child, the girl, overcome with guilt, tells her parents that she lied. Right? So now the parents, realizing it is not the monk's child, go back to the monk and they say, "This is not your child, we're taking it back." And again, the monk just says, "Is that so?" And he lets them take the child back. The monk does not try to know that my child. He does not try to tell his students, "Hey, you know, I didn't do anything. You know, this is a misunderstanding." You know, he doesn't do anything to protect himself. And even after most likely falling in love with that child, how could anybody raise a child for a year and not fall in love? He doesn't do a thing when they come to take the child back. He doesn't say, "Hey, you gave it to me. Hey, I took care of it. You know, this is mine now. It's my child in my heart now." You know, he doesn't do anything. So the monk there is acting like Jesus. He's allowing the unfolding to be the unfolding, even if to the personal self it's a train wreck. My reputation is being completely destroyed. All of my students are leaving me. Can we allow the train wreck in the opinion of the personal mind? Because awakening is genuinely more important to us, which is what Jesus is demonstrating. Or do we fall back on our ego survival mechanism, on our ego safety ideas, and do everything we can, like Pilate is demonstrating, in order to try and become safe temporarily in the mind of the ego? This, I believe Eckhart Tolle is trying to tell us in his book, A New Earth, is the difference between the genuine spiritual student and the one who is fooling themselves. And, of course, it's not up to us to ever judge anyone else, ever. I mean, that's not what this is about. This is about a sincere contemplation within me. What do I want? So that when things begin to go wrong in the personality's assessment, I can decide, do I want to fall back on the ego survival mechanism? Or do I want to let this fear drive my mind inward. Let's go on to the next part of this story. The next part of this story is called the crucifixion. So the soldiers took charge of Jesus. Carrying his own cross, he went out to the place of the skull, which in Aramaic is called Golgotha. Here they crucified him and him with two others, one on each side and Jesus in the middle. Pilate had a notice prepared and fastened to the cross. It read, "Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews." Many of the Jews read this sign, for the place where Jesus was crucified was near the city, and the sign was written in Aramaic, Latin, and Greek. Pilate wanted to make sure everybody could read it. The chief priests of the Jews protested to Pilate, "Do not write the King of the Jews, but that this man claimed to be the King of the Jews." Pilate answered, "What I have written, I have written." When the soldiers crucified Jesus, they took his clothes, dividing them into four shares, one for each of them, with the undergarment remaining. This garment was seamless, woven in one piece from top to bottom. "Let's not tear it," they said to one another. "Let's decide by lot who will get it." This happened that the scripture might be fulfilled, which said, "They divided my garments among them and cast lots for my clothing." So this is what the soldiers did. Near the cross of Jesus stood his mother, his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus saw his mother there and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, "Dear woman, here is your son." And to the disciple, "Here is your mother." From that time on, the disciple took her into his home. So, as I was reading this story, again, Pilate is demonstrating for us what many of us do, and that is trying to attach blame. Remember, possibly because of his wife's dream, Pilate does not want to be responsible for this man's death. And so the reason he wrote the King of the Jews on the sign in Aramaic and Greek and what was the other language? Let's see. Well, it doesn't matter. In three languages. Aramaic, Latin, and Greek. Is because Pilate was trying to blame the Jews for the crucifixion. And the Jews, in return, were like, "Don't write that on there," right? "Don't write that on there. Say that this man said he was the King of the Jews." So what they are doing is now taking the blame and casting it on Jesus. You know, as a blasphemer. So the Jews aren't responsible for Jesus' crucifixion. Jesus is, right? Because he's guilty. Pilate isn't responsible for Jesus' crucifixion because the Jews are. They're guilty. They said he was a criminal when he's not. Everybody is casting the blame outward on someone else. Of course, we don't hear anything from Jesus in this particular part of the story except, "Dear woman, here is your son and here is your mother," a bit of compassion. But Jesus isn't taking part at all in this casting of blame. Jesus isn't there saying, actually the Jews, they're the guilty ones, or actually Pilate, he's the guilty one. You know, Jesus isn't getting involved in this discussion at all. So again, Pilate and the Jews are giving us one example, the casting of blame. And Jesus is giving us another example, just not being involved in that at all. So this gives us another opportunity to look at ourselves if we want to be the genuine spiritual student. Do we blame others, whether it's a friend, a family member, a politician, a government, you know, a corporation? Do we blame others for what we perceive as our misfortune, or for what we perceive as things going in a way other than the way they should have gone? I have always felt, you know, always meaning, you know, since early on this spiritual path, I have always felt that if I blame someone, I am missing my own opportunity for healing. This is similar to that thought of when fear comes, does it drive your mind inward, right? That's a wonderful, wonderful thought, because if you contemplate that, you know, when the fear came, it drove my mind inward. If you contemplate that, then you might take that stance when things happen in the world that bring up fear in you. Another wonderful thought to contemplate is, if I blame someone or something, I miss my own opportunity for healing. For the healing of a false belief. For the healing of a false attachment. For the healing of a false desire. But I miss my own opportunity for healing whenever I blame. If you contemplate that, then when the scene shows up and it's even apparent, I mean, to the ego mind, it will be apparent that somebody did something to create this misfortune for you. So when that appearance arises, do I choose to just go with it and believe that I'm having this situation because so-and-so did such and such? Or do I choose to remember, if I blame someone, I miss my own opportunity to heal? This is an opportunity for genuineness. And just like Eckhart Tolle points out that many, many people who perceive themselves to be spiritual students actually respond from fear. You know, like when the stock market crashes, they immediately start responding from fear, changing their investments. And he points out that is not the genuineness, right? That's still just coming from the ego. The opportunity to blame someone is also the opportunity to heal, and we have a choice. And if we're coming from genuineness, we will choose never to blame. We can accept, in fact, what Jesus said in the previous section, this could not happen if it were not coming from above. We can accept the situation as it is. We can go within and look at our own resistance, our own judgments, and uncover thoughts that need to be seen and let go, or attachments or desires that need to be seen and let go. But if we fall into blaming, no matter how apparent that is, I mean, look how apparent this is. It seems like somebody needs to be blamed for an innocent man hanging on a cross. Somebody. You know, it always cracks me up in the news when things happen. You know, whether it's a plane crash or what. When things happen, immediately they go in looking to see who is to blame. And if you go seeking who is to blame, you will find someone to blame. What if we choose right now that we want healing more than blame, regardless of how big the train wreck, regardless of how how much the personal self says, this is wrong, this shouldn't have happened, right? This isn't what I want. What if we choose, no matter what, blaming is something we are giving up? We will never again blame. If you choose to never again blame, never again blame, no matter what it looks like, no matter how big the train wreck, never again blame. Jesus isn't blaming. He's hanging on a cross, an innocent man hanging on a cross. If we choose to never again blame, maybe we choose to breathe through something, rest, accept, and trust through something, inquire into our own upset, but never again blame. We're choosing healing. We're choosing awakening. We're being genuine. The other part of this story that I just read is the end part where it says that Jesus saw his mother there along with Mary Magdalene and Mary the wife of Clovis and his aunt, his mother's sister. And we can assume that his mother was upset. And he says, dear woman, here is your son. And then he says to the disciple, here is your mother. Another thing that Jesus seems to be demonstrating to me is not holding others to the expectation that we choose for ourselves. Maybe expectation wasn't the right word. Never holding others to just the choice that we are making. So in my mind, I am making the choice not to blame. I am making the choice not to act from fear. I am making the choice not to act from ego, not to believe ego. But I don't hold anyone else to that choice. And see, this is another mistake we make, is that we see somebody else acting from fear and trying to manipulate and we judge them for it. Or we see someone else blaming and we judge them for it. We see someone else believing the world and we judge them for it. Jesus is not judging his mother for being upset and being in fear while her son is hanging on a cross. Instead, he does what he can to comfort her. Another saying that I have had since near the very beginning of the spiritual path is, everyone else is allowed to be an ego. Literally. Everyone around me, if that is what everyone around me chooses, they can be an ego. They're allowed to. They're allowed to act from their ego survival mechanism. They're allowed to blame. They're allowed to react, right? They're allowed to, with my blessing, if that's what they choose. My choice is for me. And I cannot completely make my choice if I hold you accountable to make the same choice. Because if I hold you accountable to make the same choice, I'm going to judge you, which means I'm not making my choice. So the only way I can make my choice not to be an ego, not to listen to ego, not to believe ego, not to react from ego, right? The only way that I can thoroughly, can completely make my choice is to allow you to be an ego. And if necessary, to have compassion for your fear, to have compassion for you in the circumstance that you think shouldn't have happened. And that's what Jesus is demonstrating here. He's not judging anyone else for not making the same choice that he's making. He's not judging his mother for not being able to watch her son on the cross or for not choosing to watch her son on the cross and say, in pure acceptance, well, this could not be happening if it was not coming from above. She's resistant to this. She's fearful Who knows, she might even be angry. She might even be blaming in her mind. And he's not judging her for that. He just shows compassion by saying, dear woman, here is your son. He gives her someone to hold her while she cries because he can't do that. So next week, we'll continue looking at the death of Jesus and the burial of Jesus. But between now and next week, I think what's really important for me and for you if you choose to, is that we just contemplate that word genuine. Do I want to be the genuine spiritual student who uses everything that comes up in my life for the purpose of awakening? Or do I only want to pretend to be the spiritual student when actually I fall back on the ego whenever things seem to be going in a way that I wish they wouldn't? You know, do I want to be genuine? And again, remember that if I want to be genuine, then that includes allowing everyone else to choose the ego. Everyone around me. I don't ask anything of them. My only responsibility is to accept the atonement for myself. All right, that's it for today. So I will release the mic, and thank you everyone for coming and spending this time with me. Bye. Oh, by the way, I'll be back tonight. I just remembered, at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, I'll be here with Nancy Sullivan and Stephen Mead, and we're going to be looking at NTI, talking about willingness. That's where we'll start. All right, bye.